You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. So this episode is actually the first in a 9-part series on ADUs. So it's going to be a good one of many up-and-coming ones. So for those who don't know me, my name is Chris Lopez. I'm a real estate agent here at Your Castle Real Estate, and I specialize in helping house hackers find properties and helping investors buy long-term rentals. So often with my house hacking clients, the topic of ADUs come up because they are an amazing way to house hack that can really increase your returns and juice your cash flow while you're living there. However, there are definitely some issues with finding and building ADUs. First of all, they are just not easy to find on the MLS. Getting a permit is often a long and confusing process with the city. Plus, there are very few general contractors that have experience in building ADUs. So one of my running goals has been actually to find a knowledgeable person to bring on so that I can learn and also all my listeners can learn more about ADUs. So I'm very happy to say that I finally have found someone. So as I said earlier, this episode is the first in a 9-part series. Yep, you heard that right, 9 parts. So get ready to learn. And our goal here is to build just a solid resource, an education resource, so you can come back and listen and watch them at any time and get a really good understanding of ADUs. And then we can add future episodes and build upon this core educational content. So the way this will work is we're doing each episode live as a webinar so people can ask questions while we're doing it. But if you can't make the live webinar, do not sweat it. We will post the recording to YouTube. The audio will go to our podcast channel, the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, and we'll also write out a detailed blog post. So to keep things simple, just go to denverinvestmentrealestate.com/ADU. You'll have all the links to the recordings, future ones, and all the resources that we talk about throughout this series. All right, so moving on to the very first episode. So my expert ADU guests are from ADU for You, which is a local advocacy group on ADUs where they want to focus at the city planning level and streamline the permitting, building, planning, and financing process of ADUs. So the first guest is Jeff Baker, and Jeff has a diverse background as an entrepreneur, including owning and operating brew pubs, small startups, medical devices, and is also an active real estate investor. So he's from Colorado and he lives downtown and is actively building an ADU for one of his properties. So Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And our second guest who will be here in a few minutes is Matt Komnek, who is a realtor that works in the greater Denver area. And Matt and his wife moved to Denver about 6 years ago, and he got into real estate when he saw a niche market and working with Denver's relocating healthcare workers. Since then, he's expanded his focus onto working with investment properties and ADUs. So Matt will be joining us in a few minutes. So Jeff, man, I'm excited to have you here and do all this stuff. So I am literally sliding the keyboard over to you so you can start having control of these of the PowerPoint slides. But I gave you my intro version of you and ADU for You, but please fill in some color onto you and what ADU for You is all about.
Yes. Yeah, so our first presentation here is accessory dwelling what. So this will be a very basic presentation. We'll touch on many topics that will be addressed in more detail on the 9 future ones, or I should say the 8 future ones. So yeah, ADU for You, we are a modern carriage house builder. We educate, advocate, and build. We are working to push the ADU movement forward through these efforts. We give homeowners an unexpected and exceptional ADU building experience. So we are doing advocacy and really trying to push this education and make some changes to make this easier for homeowners to do. It's an interesting market because the developers are homeowners and homeowners typically aren't property developers. So it's you get a unique lack of understanding of what's going on, and it throws some it's a different ball for sure. So we'll move on to our next slide, which is what is an ADU? I think most of the people that are on this are interested in ADUs, so they probably know what ADUs are.
Yes.
They do come with multiple names, carriage houses, granny flats, and I like to say build the granny flat so the granny can be the nanny. That's one of the uses that we'll touch on here in a little while. is having grandma move in so they can take care of the kids and be closer to the family. And
I mean, that's what I'm doing in my house. We didn't do it with an ADU, but we refinished out our walkout basement to make it a mother-in-law suite for that exact reason. And we looked at ADUs and just couldn't find anything.
Yeah, no, that's great. And so the mother-in-law suite is another name, backyard cottages. You'll hear laneway homes. That's a Vancouver name. But basically anything that is a secondary housing unit to the single family residential lot. That's how Cole Peterson, who's an expert out of Portland, Oregon, describes what an ADU is.
So let me ask you a question, Jeff, is because I've heard these different names all over the country. As I, you know, I've lived around the country. Is ADU like the official term or is that just the term we use here in Denver?
So that is a term that Cole found back into the 1980s.
Okay.
It's more of like with the zoning terms. So all the names that we've listed, carriage houses, granny flat, those are kind of your, that's what people end up calling them because accessory dwelling unit or ADU just sounds kind of formal and weird. But yeah, that is a zoning, really a zoning term. And it's pretty common wherever you go is that even if they call it laneway houses in Vancouver, they're still accessory dwelling units.
Okay.
So different cities have different names for them. And that will depend on where you are, obviously, or different definitions for them. City of Denver, for example, says ADUs such as a guest house that are detached from the primary residence and contain provisions for sleeping, cooking, and sanitation. City of Boulder, separate, complete, single housekeeping unit, either within a detached dwelling unit or detached accessory structure. City of Englewood, accessory dwelling units known as ADUs are small secondary residential structures located behind a primary house or on top of a garage. And they actually distinguish the garage with the apartment above it as a carriage house. And they describe a ranch style as a cottage house. So that's in Englewood. They're all ADUs, but it's the two different styles, the ranch style without the garage, which might be better for family members that, have issues going upstairs or whatever, or
yeah.
Family members might be a better solution. So when you're building your ADU and you think about these different uses, flexibility is key in these and thinking about what your potential uses are down the road, because they might not be the uses you're going to use them for right now. But that's what makes these things really nice.
And so that's just the city of Englewood's own legal descriptions for those two different styles. Okay.
Yep. And then I'll throw one more out at you. Arvada and Englewood and Arvada have come out saying that they are pro ADU and they're really for these things. City Arvada calls an accessory dwelling unit, sometimes called an in-law apartment or carriage house, is typically an additional housing unit within or on the same lot as a single family home, with entries and amenities that are separate from the primary residence.
Yeah, and I've actually talked to a few builders about, they're doing some ADUs up in Arvada, and they told me about it. They sound very progressive. I don't know if progressive is the best word, but they're on the forefront of it, because he's telling me how it basically sounds like an up-down duplex where he's building a ranch home, and then in the basement is a totally separate unit, but it's going to be zoned as an ADU rather than a multi-unit. Which sounded really cool.
Yeah, and their lots are a little bit bigger than you get in the city.
Okay.
So it makes construction a little bit easier. You're not trying to squeeze into alleys, and a lot of times they don't have the power lines and all the other things. And the city of Arvada is very pro ADU.
Okay.
If you go in to talk to their counters, they're all excited to talk about ADU.
Really?
So it's a little bit different than what you get in some of the other cities, for sure.
Yeah.
So, and actually, we have one of the examples in this slideshow is... that's in Arvada. It's a ranch style that's in Arvada. So the history, ADUs were banned in Denver in 1956. This was a typical housing form before the 1950s, all across America, not just in Denver. The nuclear family was a trend mid-last century, and single-family zoning played a huge role in this. And there's some stats, actually Cole Peterson has pulled some stats about what the zoning looks like right now. And he looked at 917 cities across the United States, and determined that 68% of the zoning single family. But then if you look to the actual need for single family, that type of housing unit, it's only 25 to 33%. So we have a need for only 25 to 33% for single family housing, but 68% of 917 cities in America are zoned single family. So there's three things that really spur ADU development coming back. Single family zoning is one of them. Affordable housing is another one. And then political support. We kind of have all of that in Colorado right now.
So why did Denver ban it?
I imagine, you know, I don't know the exact details on the ban, but I imagine it was because, and I've seen this in some of the older neighborhoods, people were turning these things into businesses. You'd see like a barbershop in the backyard. And at one point they probably really didn't care and there was no real zoning. And then zoning started coming in and restrictions on, okay, you can't have commercial businesses in the residential zone district. And so that may be, one of the reasons.
Okay.
And you do see it. I actually have seen, it looks like a, I don't know if it's living structure, but it has old awnings for an ice cream shop on the back of the property. So that may be why they said, okay, no more of these. Plus they were just getting built by, you know, just no permits, just throwing these things
just
out.
Just haphazard.
Yeah.
And plus that was a big trend. I mean, you went back to, you said the nuclear family, everyone came back from World War II and everyone wanted to live on their own and move away from the multi-generational family living.
Which is interesting because humans for a long, long time have lived in multi-generational and had family, older family living, you know, watching out for the seniors. And that kind of really did change, you know, in the 1950s. And so the interesting thing is the family size got smaller, the house size got bigger. And that continued to go up. And we're kind of seeing a reverse of that. People are moving back into the cities.
Yeah.
You know, and cost of living, that is a huge thing. When you cannot afford to buy something, but maybe you could afford it with an income property on the back. And that's in Vancouver, British Columbia. They specifically, if you are a real estate agent showing somebody, they're going to ask, does it have a mortgage maker or a mortgage helper?
That's a common thing out there.
It's a common thing because the market's like 1.4 to 1.8 million.
I know, it's crazy up there.
So these people are trying to buy houses say, there's no way I can do it without having income. And because they're so much further ahead of us that their appraising and their financing, all that stuff is caught up. So it is easier to do. That's where we will get eventually, but it's going to take work to get there.
Very interesting. Okay.
So moving on, different types of ADUs. You've got the attached above. So that's basically your apartment above the garage. And that can be done on, you know, existing garages if the foundation and the structure can support it. Or you can build a new garage with an apartment above it. Detached ranch, which we talked about. You're not seeing the detached ranch in the city lots just because they want the parking space as well as the apartments. So you're seeing that more in like your Arvada and your Englewood where you have bigger lots, maybe even like in Lakewood.
Okay.
There'll be opportunities where you have bigger lots to put just the detached ranch style in the back. And a lot of them will have the garage on the front of the house already. You know, the house comes with a garage attached. And so they don't need another garage on the back of the property. They just want a rental unit. So.
So you're saying they can just build the rental unit out back or on top of the attached garage?
Well, in the city, we're seeing them build it on top. Well, no, not on top of the attached garage.
Okay.
On top of a detached garage, but not on top of the attached garage. Because most of these suburban houses already have the garage built onto the house.
So, yeah. Okay.
And then you got the attached, which would basically be your, what people think about a mother-in-law suite being in the basement of the house with a separate entrance. And having your kitchen and your bathroom and everything down there. So
okay,
those you probably see, there's probably a lot more of those unregistered than we're aware of because you can't really see them. And it's an easier transition to make to do that to your property.
Okay.
So requirements vary from city to city. We'll never see standardized across the whole state, but hopefully we'll see all these zoning regulations loosen up as time goes on. There's been, you know, a pilot study in Curtis Park for almost 10 years now that has shown no issues. So I think that is a good proponent to expand this out to further cities.
So yeah, you mentioned, you know, Denver, Lakewood, Englewood, Arvada, kind of they're doing more of the ADU stuff. Is there any collaboration or talking amongst the municipalities about as one learns or one makes mistakes? Is there, you know,
not
sharing of that?
Okay. But, you know, if we get this advocacy pushing really hard, then that would be a goal of that, to get these guys talking and maybe streamline it a little bit, make it a little easier. So future, I think the future is really bright for ADUs. A quote from Cole Peterson says, by 2020, ADUs will take off in tens of cities, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you only really have Portland and, you know, California just legalized the whole state for it. So you got a lot in San Francisco. Vancouver, Austin, Texas is another area that they're building ADUs in. So you're going to start seeing it anywhere where you have those affordable housing need, single family zoning, and political support for it. Those are the things that are going to push it through. Yeah, there's a lot of other hurdles and obstacles and poison pills, as Cole we'll call them
poison pills.
Okay. Basically things that are the, you know, they can say you can do this, but then you get in there to zoning, there's so many hurdles to get over or stops. Whether that's, you know, a parking requirement, that could be something that could be, could stop you from building and could stop a city from adopting the ADUs. They've shown that they're not changing characters of neighborhoods. People don't even know that they're there. You go around Denver and there's a lot of ADUs and you don't, you're not like, oh, there's one. You really, really got to look in the back of the property. So the future is bright. We'll go into some common uses and benefits of these. We'll go through kind of just this list on this PowerPoint first. So long-term rental, obviously, you become an instantaneous backyard property investor, income property. There used to be a show, I don't know if it's still on HGTV, income property, where people were specifically looking for that so they could help pay their mortgage.
And a lot of times these are like two-bedroom, one-bath or one-bedroom, one-bath type setups?
Or studio.
Or studios, yep. Okay.
Yep. The two bed, you see more of the one. So a single bed, whether it's in a bedroom or if they just had it as a basically like loft style.
Okay.
Build the short-term rental. Obviously you got to check with your city for that. You can't do it everywhere. There's rules and regulations and I encourage you to follow those rules. Mm-hmm. There are some heavy, there's some heavy fines that could come out of them. You can get in serious trouble if you try to defraud the government by showing false documents. For example, in Denver, it has to be on your primary residence to do short-term rental.
And they've got their full-time enforcement crew too.
They do have an enforcement crew and I've spoken directly with him and he's seeing a lot of people that are doing fake stuff, you know, manipulating documents, whatever. Don't do it. It's not a good idea.
Yep.
If you get caught, it's defrauding a government official. It's not good. So
that's more than just a fine then. That could be, I mean, fraud is a scary word.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Ooh, okay.
Don't do anything that you're not supposed to on the short term. Plus, we don't want to ruin that industry. We want the industry to be a good industry in compliance and not have them turn everything around and say you can't short-term rental because that's going to take a benefit out of having an ADU.
Yeah.
That's part of your flexibility of having these because maybe you don't want to short-term it all the time. Maybe, you know, for example, we know a gentleman who has family that lives across the big pond and they visit 3 months out of the year. So he puts them in the ADU 3 months out of the year when they're here. They got their own spot. It's great. Family's on the same property. But he's only using it 3 months out of the year. So what's he going to do the rest? You can't really do a full long-term rental in there. And yeah, you can try and do a nine-month rental. But your Airbnb gives you the option or your short-term rental gives you the option to rent that and be really flexible with it.
Do probably short-term or if the law is not allowed, probably do like a medium-term corporate rental or traveling nurse rental too, right?
That could be a, yeah. And that might be less of a headache.
Yeah.
A lot of homeowners are finding that they'll start doing the short-term rentals on the beginning to kind of recoup their return on investment quicker. But then they're like, okay, I don't want to deal with this anymore. I'm going to go to a long-term. So I've seen that before a couple years, they do short-term and just kind of boost their ROI, try and shorten their payback time and then go over to a long-term just because it's less of a headache.
You're a hotel operator then. Yeah. I mean, it's.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And Denver, you got to get your lodgers and you got to pay your lodgers tax and you got to be registered with the city for that. And so, yeah, it's you're a hotel. So, and maybe people love that because I think B&Bs kind of sound fun. Maybe after you do it for a while, get sick of changing other people's sheets.
It'll sound fun to me. So,
but affordable housing, because these are smaller units, that does drive the rental rate, the long-term rental rate down. Downsizing. So if you love your property, you just retired, you want to downsize, but you've put 25 years into your property and your gardens and, you know, you don't want to move, you could build an ADU in the back, downsize to that, rent the front.
There's your
retirement income or a supplement to your retirement income. Economic downturn. So we're going to have another one. We have another 2008. Well, let's hope that we don't go that bad again, but we know we will have another economic downturn at some point. It can't grow forever. So at that point, a lot of people, when that happened, a lot of people went underwater and lost their homes. That was, you know, coming out of 2008 was a hot time for real estate investors to get in and buy a lot of short sales and properties that had been left to the mortgage companies and foreclosed. So if you do have that economic downturn, that gives you an option to, oh, I don't have to go underwater. I can move to the back of the property,
yep,
reduce my expenses and rent the front property. Income property, obviously all of those are giving you extra income. It also increases densification, which many of the cities want to do, like Denver. And Denver's running out of lots to do that. So in order to increase densification, this is one way to do it without changing the character of the neighborhood.
Yeah, because I mean, I've definitely read, you know, over your various articles, different podcasts where you talk about, you know, a lot of times it's increased density. They want to, hey, you know, take a single family lot and put a 6-unit up or a small apartment building. And of course, one of those things where the neighbors are like, well, they're NIMBY's, not my backyard. I don't want to do it down the street, do it across the, you know, other side of the highway. And it's that catch 22 because it just, it changes the characteristic.
Yep, it does. Oh. And these don't, they really don't. So, but yeah, it's a wealth building opportunity for homeowners. It really can be part of your retirement. It can be just alleviate a lot of pressures. Everything's really expensive, especially in Colorado now, and it's expensive to live. Environmentally, these are a little bit more friendly. They're a smaller footprint. They tend to be more energy efficient. You can build them to be super energy efficient. We could do zero E type of buildings and put in, you know, your solar panels on top and really making a very, very efficient building. But the reduced energy and heating and cooling because of the size of the unit, 20% of our energy use in the United States is from heating and cooling of homes.
Wow.
So if we can reduce that, that'll help. Social, it helps on a social aspect because it provides affordable options, provides 1 to 2 bedroom units in areas that are generally in short supply of those. And it provides that unique configuration for multi-generational living. It also activates alleys. So a lot of these are off of alleys, and alleys can be a dark, bad place, and they have been for a long time, but alley beautification is happening in the city of Denver. The city's taken on some of the blocks to beautify and make more as a public area and not just the place where we put our trash cans. So having that activated, that reduces some of the bad things that happen in alleys as well.
Yeah.
By having, you know, if you can have a door off the back of your ADU, that's the entrance to and from your property, that's going to activate the alley because someone's living there and that's their front door basically. So good opportunities to help with that.
So kind of an oddball question here for you, Jeff, just because I'm very interested in like multi-generational just trends. Have you noticed, seen any trends or statistics about multi-generational living, you know, grandparents, parents, kids living together? I'm on the same properties you've been researching all the ADU stuff.
Yeah, I don't have actual hard numbers that I could give you. I could probably find some of those, but I do get the vibe and the feel that this is switching back to being more multi-generational.
Yeah.
People moving in, you know, new family, new baby, get a new job. They move into Denver and family's in another state and they want to be close to the family. And that you're seeing a lot of that. Really, parents or grandparents, I should say, wanting to be close to the kid and being close to their grandkid and being close to their kids as well.
And yeah, I'm a big advocate of that because that's what I'm doing. My mother-in-law lives with us and for all the reasons you just said. And it's interesting because a lot of times I tell people that and their initial, you know, facial expression or reaction is like, oh my gosh, how can you do that? I'm like, well, number one, like we all don't hate each other, which you kind of got to start there. But when I kind of talk about the setup it gives us for just, you know, less stress as lifestyle, the money it saves us on not having daycare, the flexibility it gives us, meal sharing, reducing utility costs, or like, oh yeah, that actually doesn't sound too bad. I'm like, yeah, and it's actually going to allow us to save a lot more money to buy more real estate and help us retire much earlier than expected.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just, yeah, as you find those numbers, definitely keep me in the loop because I'm all about that. I think it's an overlooked area.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, a lot of families say, yeah, I love my parents, but, you know, a week in the house is great, but I don't want months and months and months and months.
Yeah.
You know, and so having them have their, plus, they probably don't really enjoy sharing that either. They've been independent for a long time and be able to have their own space. I think
it just
makes so much sense to do that. And I think that, you know, you're seeing that, I don't know, it's not looked down upon anymore. And it's also, if you're thinking about flexibility, so there could be kind of a give and take. They're coming in, they're helping as the nanny, taking care of the kids. But as they age, and if they stay in that unit, the roles reverse, and now you're taking care of them, but they're not going into assisted living. We all know that's really expensive.
Oh yeah, it's horrendously expensive.
And not always the best situation. I mean, I think if you get into a good operator, but if you're put into a home, per se, then...
Well, like every other week on 2020 or Nightline or one of those shows, you see the videos of the healthcare worker beating up the old people or something equivalent. Like, it's not an uncommon thing to see, unfortunately.
Or even in that situation, let's say it isn't multi-generational, but the family wants to build the ADU. Maybe the husband or wife is having some health issues and they want to bring the healthcare, like an on-site nurse.
Mm-hmm.
That could be the nurse's quarters.
Or bringing an au pair as well for raising kids, all sorts. I mean, there's tons of options.
Flexibility, really. Yeah. So some of these next slides, we got some examples. So this is in Arvada. This is a ranch-style home, ranch-style ADU. The property owner did a lot of work on this himself to reduce some costs. That's not going to be allowed in every municipality.
Like, what was he allowed to do? Do you remember?
Basically, he did a lot of the building. He did have a general contractor, but he called him like, hey, please send a framing guy over. I want help with framing. But he did a lot of the work.
And a lot of times that's not allowed. They don't allow the
owner.
Yeah, in
Denver, they're going to want them. But yeah, it is an opportunity to save some money if you can do that. But it also could, sometimes those situations aren't necessarily the best if you get a homeowner and then they're trying to do multiple change orders throughout the process and whatnot.
Yeah.
But that is one way. I think this is a great looking unit. It's ranch style. They originally just had a flat roof on there. They popped that one side up to give a little bit more room in there. So that's a lofted area that is actually just used for storage. And that's what it's listed as not another living area. But, these grandkids get up there and plan it, and it's extra storage area, and it gives a different architectural feature to the building to make it look a little bit more unique.
Yeah, and that would be like a great photo for an Airbnb listing too. Just looks good. It looks sexy.
Yeah, and that is a really, really nice unit. He did a good job on it. Matched the house with the siding. He's got the yard fenced off, so there, if he did want to have separate areas, he's got still half of his yard and can give the ADU half of the yard. You'll see that used. You'll see that done a lot of places where the yard shared or the garage is shared. A two-car garage maybe split down the middle. The front house has one bay and the ADU above has one. And that could also be required by the city in some different city zoning requirements.
And just for everyone listening to the future recording of this on the podcast or whatever, all these slides, images, we'll put them up on the website so you guys can come here and see these properties as well, just because they're fun to look at.
Yeah, for sure. And so here's another example. This is a converted. So this is an 1890 original carriage house that was built in Denver and has been converted into a two-bedroom. So this is one of the few two-bedrooms that you'll see. But they got the living area downstairs, and you can see all the old brick.
Yeah, it's all the old exposed brick.
And then they've got some bedrooms upstairs, two bedrooms upstairs. That's another view.
So this was originally a carriage house 100 years ago or whatever. And then they revitalized it?
Correct. And I don't know if it was ever lived in, 130 years ago, or if it was used to actually store the carriage and to store hay above.
Different times.
Yeah, the main door has been... So this door that you can see right there, that's the main entrance, but that comes off the back of the property. The original door was on the street side.
Okay.
And this butts up right onto the alley. So they would have been able to have the hay truck or wouldn't have been a hay wagon or whatever come in and get it up to the second story off of the alley for this one. There's a little yard, so you can see it's fenced off, little patio area for that. They got their own grill, AC unit. You can see the properties next door to that house. This is a ranch style, another ranch style one. This is actually out of Portland, Oregon. You're seeing more of this style up in Portland than the stacked garage with the apartment above.
Like, is there any specific reason for that? Is it just kind of history and
probably
that's the way it was?
Lot sizes.
Okay.
Have to do with, and if the garage is on the front of the house already, that's probably what's dictating most of those decisions. This is a little bit larger interior.
Is this one in Denver? You know?
I'm not sure exactly where this one is, to tell you the truth.
And that's a great layout. You've got a big open concept.
That's big, yeah.
And that's bathroom and kitchen, bathroom and living room, kitchen, I should say. Bedroom is the word I'm trying to think of.
Yep. So going through getting your ADU going, this is very general. This is not going into detail. In future webinars, we'll go into some more detail on these. So before you do anything, you need to check your zoning regulations and make sure that you're allowed to do that. You don't want to spend any money and start going down the road of building this if you don't know if you can do it.
And what is the easy way, if I'm jumping the gun to a future webinar, like how do people check the zoning? Go to the website, got to knock on the permitting office downtown, what do they do?
Yeah, so there is information typically on these cities' websites, but it can be a little bit cumbersome. And each property can be unique. So so that's one way you can do it. You can reach out to us and we'll dig in. You can go to the counter and speak to somebody. Hey, here, you know, bring them, this is what my property is. Is there any way that I can do this on here? What are going to be the hurdles to do that? Probably the easiest way is to just shoot me an email and with your property address, and I'll dig in for you to see if it is zoned for that. Now, hopefully this is going to be all changing very soon, at least in Denver. But yeah, and once again, there could be specific things on the property. For example, we've got a gentleman that's asked us about a property that is zoned for ADUs, but they've already converted the front house to a triplex. So are they going to let you build another living unit on the property? The lot size, the requirements for lot size, or everything seems to meet up, but we need to go talk to them.
So they got a single family house, a triplex.
That's a single family house that they converted to a triplex.
Okay. Good.
And all right.
So we're gonna take a break here. I think our second guest, Matt, is coming on in. So yeah, I'll let you get situated and I'll let kind of Jeff introduce you again. And kind of you can take back off the show.
Excellent. Yeah. So Matt Comnack just joined us, and he is a realtor, like Chris mentioned, and part of the ADU for You team. And he's going to be joining us with these webinars to talk about ADUs.
Great. Well, welcome, Matt.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
So, check the zoning and regulations. And next bullet point, design, review, and landmark commission. What's that?
So if you're in a landmark district, a historic landmark district in Denver, or any other landmark commission or a landmark district, you're going to need to check. But I'm specifically speaking about Denver on this one. Is if you're in a landmark district, you got to make sure that you go through them. You can't just put any design up. So don't start designing stuff until you talk to your neighborhood. Typically, the registered neighborhood organization will have a design review committee of some sort that will give you some guidance or some suggestions to meet to match the historic character, and match might not be the correct word, to blend in with the historic character.
Yeah.
They definitely want to see a difference between the old and the new, but they don't want a giant pop top above an 1890 little Victorian built house.
Yeah.
So you definitely want to look into that. That's going to add some extra hurdles. Work with them, not against them, is my recommendation. And I'm actually in a historic landmark district. So I've gone through design review. We basically worked with the architect and with design review to get the plans, how we wanted them and how we thought that landmark would approve them. And then we met with landmark, and that's a whole process of working with the staff to get their suggestions, their comments back. And then you actually have to go to a public hearing.
And what neighborhood in Denver do you live in?
I'm in Curtis Park.
You're in Curtis Park. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. And so that can be a potential hurdle, but working with them will get you further along than working against them. You have to have your landmark approval before you can submit to zoning.
Okay.
So you have to have a certificate of appropriateness, so a letter from the landmark commission saying, we've reviewed this case, and if these plans are built as we've stamped them, then we're okay with it.
But basically, you need to already have your plans figured out when you go to the landmark commission.
You got
to
at least have your conceptual schematic design done.
And what does that mean exactly? Because I've not developed anything. Yeah, I know so a lot of people are having. So
you don't have to have all your construction stuff on there. They're not looking at the construction element. So you don't have to have your mechanical engineering, your electrical, and your plumbing all done on those plans. Sometimes your design review committee does want to see what's going on the inside as well, even though they don't have say over that. But you basically have them approve those schematic plans, the conceptual designs of what it's going to look like.
Okay.
And they're really concerned with what it's going to look like from the street. So not necessarily from the alley side or from the back. Now, you do have your neighbors to think about, but they're going to probably want to give their input on what it's going to look like because they're going to be staring at it for a long time. So that would be your conceptual and schematic design. And you can get a price for construction based off of those before you go to your next step to go into permitting. So,
and what's the general ballpark range of getting that drawn up by an architect or
yeah.
I don't know who would do that. Like, what's the ballpark?
So we've actually working with an architect that, depending on the property, somewhere in the ballpark of $1,000 to get a conceptual.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
Really, really.
I was expecting.
It could be up. I've also heard like 5,000.
Yeah. Okay.
So. Yeah, you're going to get probably ballpark quotes that are all over the place, but around $1,000 for the guy that we're going for right now, which is great because I think that's a good investment to see, can I afford this? What's this going to look like?
Yeah, that's not much money to test the waters and evaluate things.
Yeah. Now, you're going to have to start getting into more detail when you get structural engineers in there, and that might come in the beginning because you might need to know if you can reuse your garage. Might need to have a structural engineer come out, look at that, and then they're going to have to put their plan together. So there could be, once again, each property is unique. It probably is more challenging to reuse a garage and to repurpose a building. Unless, for example, like in Stapleton, a lot of those foundations were poured because the neighborhood was designed to put ADUs in. And that was an upsell from the original builders. You could add an ADU onto your property. So a lot of those foundations and those garages were poured with the ability to build on top of.
Yeah, and I was actually talking to like a VP or something at Lennar Home Builders over the weekend, and he was telling me how in Stapleton they've got this next-gen product, they call it, which is like a little mother-in-law suite off the main house, separate entrance, a little living room, kitchenette, washer and dryer, and it's a neat little setup. I never seen it before this past weekend. And he's saying that's all the products they build out in Stapleton. And it sounds like Stapleton's really doing the ADUs, mother-in-law suites, whatever names. Like, that's really cool. I didn't know they were doing all that.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're building new is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like doing the new home builds.
Yep. So even the old ones that were built by Ryder 10 years ago.
Oh, really? Okay.
Some of them have the foundations. That was the original homeowner. Said, yeah, go ahead and do that extra expense for that option to do that down the road. So, the other things that could hold you up, especially if you're using an existing building, is variances. You might need variances if you're sitting inside the setbacks or sitting in the alley setback. We see this happen on properties that are already existing. So, for example, my garage is on property line. My original carriage house, which was built in 1890, is on property line. So that's grandfathered in. But now that you're changing the structure from a garage to a living unit, to an accessory dwelling unit, it changes the form, therefore it changes the zoning code, and new zoning code applies. Now, you could most likely get a variance in that situation for the garage, but you're going to have to follow those new zoning laws for the second story.
Okay.
So, for example, on mine, the garage will stay on property line, but as soon as we get up to the second story, we're going to have to get into the setback 3 feet, or so we're going to have to...
So the second story is going to have to be
setback 3 feet off the property line.
Oh, and what's this BOA bullet point? Is that...
That's Board of Adjustment. So those variances go to Board of Adjustment. But in order to go to Board of Adjustment, you have to get an official zoning denial. So you have to submit your plans to zoning and get official denial that you're trying to build something that you're not allowed and you'll need variances for. That's when you go and get on the Board of Adjustments calendar to go to a hearing with them and prove your hardship of why you should be allowed to do this.
Okay.
That's not a guarantee. They may say, no, we don't like it. And you just might not be your day. So that is an extra hurdle that could potentially slow down. And it's something to think about. Do I want to add an extra 6 months onto this job, or do I just want to scrape what's on the back of the property and start from scratch?
And that's just a case-by-case?
Case-by-case basis, yeah. So if you got a really big lot and they put the garage right in the middle and you don't have any issues with setback and things like that, then you could be missing that part of it. But and then permit ready plans for zoning and building, that's obviously going to happen before. If you've got variances that you need, you got to submit those to zoning to get denied.
Yeah.
But Board of Adjustment isn't part of every single one. And then, you know, you're going to break ground after you get to your permits and you're ready to go.
So again, I know this is going to be a hard answer for you, but just general time frame for doing all this before you strike the shovel the first time on the ground. I mean, 3 to 6 months, 3 to 9 months. I mean, what?
So it kind of really varies on the client. Because people that are really gung-ho, you know, that want to get through this permitting and design process, you know, the more willing they are to be a participant in this, the quicker we can go through. So, you know, I'd say the earliest we can get going, you know, is around the 3-month period, just because there's architectural and conceptual designs that take a little time. And then you get into more structural engineer design and then you bring in your GC and all this. But I think the more willingness that the client is, you know, willing to, you know, get their hands dirty and help us through this process, the quicker to go. But typically we're seeing about 3 to 6 months in the design and permitting phase of this.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's a good point. So if you've got a lot of like, you know, architect sends back a question for something they need to implement and the homeowner doesn't respond for a week or 10 days or 2 weeks, that can slow it down. So if you're really active, and obviously everybody's busy, but if you're really active in responding to the architect and getting those changes made, then
it speeds up the process. Yeah. Okay. And what about cost?
So before we go on to that, we'll say the build time, 3 to 8 months.
Oh, then the build time, yeah.
And that, once again, there's some factors in there that change orders on the homeowner side that can slow things down. But yeah, your build time, 3 to 8 months. You've seen them even 2 years if people are really dragging their feet or they don't have the funding to do it or whatever the case may be.
So like quickest possible, we're looking at probably 6 months total if everything's going well and everyone's on board.
I would
and
plan
major
on
issues.
A year for design and build.
Okay.
I would plan from when you start to just plan on a year.
Okay.
People think it's going to happen a lot faster, but
projects never do.
Yeah. And you're still building a mini house. It has all the systems and everything. Yeah. You got to tie into the main house. There's a lot of additional things that go into it. It seems like, yeah, you should be able to throw that up. I mean, you can throw a tough shed up pretty quick, but.
And like Jeff talked about, you know, that year timeline, it could be quicker, but the biggest thing is, you know, Denver zoning is on board with, but the permitting isn't where it needs to be yet. So, you know, that could take a little bit longer, especially with the design boards and some of the historic landmark stuff that you have to do. So, you know, it all varies between neighborhoods as well. So, but yeah, we tell everybody a year because we don't get anybody's hopes up.
That's good to set expectations.
Yeah,
all right.
Sure. So cost, yeah, you're looking at a garage with an apartment. Above it is probably going to be coming in at 220 to 275.
And that's building a garage or using an existing garage structure?
Probably either.
Okay.
Because when you're using an existing garage, for example, on mine, there's no foundation. So I've got to pull out all the slab that's poured in there right now. We got to put piers in. We got to dig underneath the brick wall, get a foundation poured, and then come back and reinforce the brick, put some steel supports to offload the weight of the second story. So you may actually be in a better situation building from new. There could be some complications that happen because of just not necessarily complications, but other things that you have to address with the existing building. So a ranch potentially has a lower cost because you're not building the garage. So you've got less materials in there, you know, maybe less equipment because you may not need the lifts or whatever the case may be. Or the basement or attached ADU is significantly lower. I mean, you converted yours and you didn't spend $220,000 on your basement.
No, but we still spent way more than I thought. I mean, we were, probably right around the $90,000 ballpark. And it was definitely a nice, nice finish. But yeah, it was still expensive, but yeah, not as expensive as this.
And was that an unfinished basement?
It was a partially finished basement, nothing fancy, but just, you know, decent carpet paint where it's just like a great giant game room down there for, you know, previous owners, big TV, sectional couch, pool table, just a big room like that. So we tore most of that apart, but it was not, you know, a fully finished basement, but we put in a full kitchen, very nice master bedroom and suite, and it's came out really nice.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So we're seeing less of those. At least the demand for the attached currently, that may change. I think a lot of people think of it on the back of the property.
Yeah. But. And mine's obviously not technically an ADU. Mine's just, we converted the basement to a mother-in-law suite.
Yeah.
So.
Which is really an attached, essentially, dwelling unit. So kind of is an ADU.
I never thought about that one.
And in Portland, you can do both an attached and a detached.
Wait, two on the same property?
Same property.
Oh, wow.
I just saw new legislation come out in Washington. I think they're going to allow up to three two or three on the property. I'm going to have to look at that article again. I just browsed that yesterday. But so, yeah, some of these other states are coming with some really, really good laws that are going to help move these forward. So financing. You want to touch on financing,
Matt? Financing is kind of one of the big hurdles right now with building an ADU, just because there's really no – it's no great way to get around it. You know, right now we're seeing most of the time it's a HELOC. So, you know, taking equity out of your home. But, you know, some of the other things, some of these lenders are starting to get wise and figure out, you know, there is some, there's a need out there for people that want to do this. So they've come up with some construction refinancing and standalone second mortgage, and then some land and loan and then build. But still, right now we're seeing HELOC is the bulk of the market of what we're doing. And then, you know, people who have cash in the bank, that always makes it easy as well.
What is a land loan? I mean, because this is not just a piece of raw land. There's a house on there. What is a land loan when there's an existing single family on there?
That would be more the situation to where you have a lot and then there's a lot next to you between your neighbors.
Okay.
That would be open and you could go get a loan on the whole thing to build it out.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, in the HELOC, like Matt said, that is probably one of the easiest things, especially in a market that has the appreciation that Denver's seen, or Colorado in general. So a lot of people have gigantic amount of equity in their home. So that's where they can get the HELOC. The one thing that's bad about the HELOC is that it's usually an adjustable rate. So you're rolling the dice there on where interest rates are going to go. So the other options, like the construction refinance, if that could work and you could get approved for that, that might be better. With that being said, if your original loan is at a great rate, you locked in at 3-something, and now your construction refinance bumps you up 2 points.
It may not make sense.
Maybe you don't want to do it that way, because the way the construction does refinance, they come in, they look at your ARV, so your appraised value after your rehab and after you build this, and they'll give you the loan for that based off of that value. But that takes your current mortgage and lumps it into one loan, and now you're at the new rate, which potentially like 5%.
So they're not putting like a second position on there. They're actually just giving you a whole new mortgage.
Yes, correct.
So basically it's almost just like doing a cash out refinance, essentially.
It is a cash out refinance based off of future value of improvement.
Of the 80. Okay.
Yep. But if you have a really good rate on your mortgage, on your first mortgage, maybe you just get a standalone second. And so you got 5% on that one and you keep your 3% on the other one. And then you touched on the land loan. That would be, I've got this property that's been vacant forever next to me, and you know, maybe it's for sale, maybe it's not. Go build onto that. So, or cash. If you got cash, it can always help.
But, you know, I've talked to a lot of lenders about, you know, coming up with these creative ways to finance these. But, you know, at least in the Denver area, we're hitting kind of a hurdle, because it's coming back to, you know, Fannie and Freddie, you know, anything conventional, they don't want to touch anything like this, because we can't get these homes appraised for what they need to be or what you're spending on them currently. Just because we don't have the comps, you know, places like Portland and Vancouver, they have the comps, they have this history. You know, that's kind of one of the big hurdles that every lender we've talked to, they come up with these creative, you know, products, but, you know, we just keep hitting the same roadblock.
Yeah. And that will obviously change. If you're building in Curtis Park, there's lots of comps. And, you know, that's another thing that our advocacy side will work with as appraisers, is trying to get these guys educated. And this is a value, you know, start counting the rental income towards, you know, your annual income to get you more house. Moving on to the next slide, advocacy and the challenges that we face, and kind of what those look like. The challenges are different from city to city. It can be individual property challenges. It can be NIMBY challenges. It can be zoning challenges. Some of the stuff we've already touched on, finance. I mean, there's a lot of potential challenges. The regulatory factors do take into account for that. There can be different things like occupancy, owner occupancy requirements. There can be parking requirements. There can be lot coverage requirements, different things along those lines that you have to take into account that make this a little bit harder to do. It's not impossible, and things are going to continue to get easier. And more people that express interest in this will continue to grow this market. This will be a viable thing for Denver and Colorado. So what can you do? You can sign up for our newsletter at youradu.com. You can sign up for our meetup group, which is Colorado ADU, Backyard Property Investors. So that's on meetup.com. And tune in for this next webinar and all the following webinars. And we will, like Chris said, as we have certain topics or things change, we can come back down the road and spend a whole webinar on talking about specific zoning issues or whatever the case may be. So.
Great. Well, I will definitely put links to the newsletter, the meetup, all that stuff in the show notes so people can click and get to those, because those sound like great resources.
Perfect. And then as far as right now, you got key dates for next steps in Denver. So Blueprint Denver is the next 20-year plan for Denver. And planning comes before zoning. So there is recommendations to allow the expansion of an adoption of zoning allowances throughout the city in Blueprint Denver. So there's quite a bit of support for that. They've already gone through their hearing and their listening phase that happened back in February. That was their second actually listening phase. This has been going on for about 3 years. So this is not new, but city council's public hearing and vote is scheduled for Monday, April 22nd at 5:30 PM. That's at the Denver City and County building at 1437 Bannock Street in the city council chambers. So if you can attend that meeting and speak and say, this is why I want ADUs allowed, that would be very helpful. Now, if you can't make the meeting, then you can go ahead and send an email to Blueprint Denver and saying why you support it and why you want to see them more readily available in Denver and why you want the adoption of Blueprint Denver to happen ASAP. There's been some people that have been trying to put that on hold, even though it's been a 3-year process. Now that the political season's turning over, in May, we got new mayoral candidates and city council members coming in. There's some people that are trying to postpone the vote on Blueprint Denver, but it's already been going on for 3 years and they've had their chance to voice their opinions over the last 3 years. And
yeah,
now they're waiting. They're going to do it again in 6 months if they push it out 6 months. So those three things would be good. So why you want them, your support for them, and that you want the Blueprint Denver to be adopted as soon as possible to put these in, because that won't happen right away. Zoning is going to have to catch up. So we're probably looking 2020 before we start seeing zoning changes.
But it's a step in the right direction, right?
It's a step in the right direction.
This is cool. Okay.
There's our meetup group again. We do have a meetup coming up in April, on April 16th, in the Highlands at Call to Arms Brewery. We got a little private room there, and we'll be having some beers and talking about ADUs, and you can meet other specialists, whether it's builders or architects, advocates that will be attending that meeting as well. And we're going to tour an ADU after that meetup. So I'll be giving you an opportunity to go see one that's been built and ask questions of the homeowner. And those are always a lot of fun to go see this. So
great. So drink and walk through an ADU.
Yeah. And we're
sounds like a good night to me.
I think we're just about three blocks away.
Yeah.
We're pretty close.
Walking distance. So just off Tennyson Street.
Even better. Cool. Well, Jeff, Matt, thank you guys. We're actually wrapping this webinar up and starting webinar 2 in about 5 minutes. But thank you guys. Like I was excited before, but after hearing this first webinar and seeing the amount of details and knowledge that you guys have, I'm even more excited about the next 8 episodes and whatever else comes in after that. So thank you guys.
Thank you so much, Chris. Appreciate it.